Okay, right. Okay, so today I'm on a Zoom call, the wonders of modern technology, to Michael Fordham, going to be known from now on as Mick. Thanks, Mick, for agreeing to talk to us over there, bring over some
No
sunshine.
worries.
So how would you describe what it is you do?
I'm here in the Philippines at the moment, professional punter, come tipster.
Okay, so
We're just building up. We're just building
what,
it up.
but you've been applying your trade over here for, well, you're from the UK, obviously. So when did you move to the Philippines and why are you over there?
Right, so basically, we moved to the Philippines 6 months, 7 months ago, something like that. We've got family out here, and it was a case of whether to go Spain, go to Greece, but because of all the things that are going on over there, Brexit, we decided the Philippines, and that's it.
Okay, so you just move lock, stock, and barrel.
Lock, stock, and barrel, we sold everything. And then I had contacts over here while I was in the UK, and it was getting to learn the Filipino way of betting, racing, etc., like that.
Okay, right. So I've just pinned it now because you didn't want to see me in it. So we'll talk about the Philippines racing in a bit. So how long have you been making money backing horses?
So back in earning money and doing it as a living. Since I was like in my early 30s, in my early 30s, but yeah, early 30s, that's when I started making the living out of it.
Okay, so
20 plus years.
tell us a bit about how you got into it. You're telling me before we did this interview that you're interested in watching people in the betting shops doing their 1 in 6 forecasts and Union Jacks and stuff like that, but you're interested in the guys that just came in, had a bet and left again.
It was funny because every day I would go in there and you would see all these what we call mug punters doing 6 and 1 forecasts and doing the favorites, second favorites, but you get to know the fact we call the faces what well, walk in, say hello, acknowledge her and things like that, and then they would go put their bet on, either watch the race or they would go out.
But were those, so did you sort of find out about those guys who they were, what they were up to? Is it, tell us a bit about how you
Yeah,
sort of.
it's because like everybody what was in the bookies at the time, they go, oh, so and so's coming in, so and so's here, like that. Try to see what he's betting, like that, because he knows he's in the know. And so I'll get talking to him. I've got more front than Sainsbury's, Simon. So I would talk to anybody.
When did you start winning? What was the thing that turned you from a betting shop punter into a winning punter?
It was like I say, in my 30s, and I've read all the books, Nick Morden, Betting for a Living, and things like that, like we've all done. And I had a few conversations with people at the racetracks. And I've got to learn that, like, specialize, don't bet every day. And the people I bumped into at the race courses, like that, it was all. It was I wasn't looking for a tip off room or anything like that. I was just interested how they operated.
Okay, so when you were still a betting shop punter, what was your sort of angle? Did you start making money when you're in the betting shops? Was it before when you went on course that you started to get a few quid?
It was on course. It was definitely on course. Like I say, prior to in my younger days, it was a case of like I would skive off school with my dinner money, go to toaster races, and you get to know people. And it was just the fascination of watching, as we called it back in the day, the betting jungle, the betting ring, and getting to know all the faces there. And it wasn't until literally that I found employment, I was working, I was getting to the races, and that's when the penny clicked about making money and earning money from betting horses, looking for the value. That was the first thing I got taught. Look for the value in a race. Look for the value and be disciplined.
And what sort of things did you cut out by being disciplined?
I found that, like, by keeping notes of what I was interested in, the jumps, I found out a large part of my bets were going down due to fallers and things like that. So I wiped that out. I also looked back, and the flat was giving me a good profit, a nice tidy profit on the flat. And then I shortened it back down again, and that flat was going on to the all weather racing. And that's where my bigger profits was on the all weather. Southall, Wolverhampton, not so much Newcastle, but Southall, Wolverhampton, Chelmsford, they was the courses for me.
Okay, and it was interesting that you told me that you had a bookmaker that used to lay your paper prices. And we've heard these. There's not many people that have actually been able to get them. So what was the story with him?
It was Brian Goodyear, back bookmakers in Wellingborough, Northamptonshire. And it was one day I went Windsor races. And I fancied this horse at Windsor. I had a big bet on it. And it got beat by a short head, a head, something like that. I can't remember the name of the horse, but I lost. Lost big time. And every day is a schooling day. And I was talking to people and they go, "What have you backed? What have you backed?" And I told them and they go, No. If Pat Edry stays for the last at Windsor, always back Pat Edry. So got home, taxi driver brought me home and things like that. And I watched it for 2, 3, 4 weeks in the bookies. And our local bookie would always give everybody the Sporting Life prices. And within them 4 weeks, whatever it was, of finding out about this little Pat Edry thing at Windsor, he would always finish odds on 6-4, something like that. The Sporting Life prices was giving 11-2, 6-1, 5-1. And I'm thinking, rightio. So because the guy in the bookies would give us, the Sporting Life prices, it was a case of, I'm going to take a bit of this 5-1 and 11-2 and whatever the Sporting Life are doing. And I might have lost on the night, but on the long term, which is what's it all about, it was, he didn't like it. He didn't like it one bit.
No, that didn't last very long then. That didn't last.
It lasted roughly 4 to 6 months because he stopped me from doing it. And then I've got my friends to put the bet on for me because they were still getting the paper prices. I would wait outside the bookmakers like that. And so that was going on for a little while. And then he thought something was wrong and he followed my friends out of the bookies and there I was outside waiting to collect the money off of them. And that was it. At the end of the day, he turned around and said, "That's it. No more paper prices for anybody. You've spoiled it for everybody." Okay.
So we'll talk about one of your biggest mentors in a bit. He was a big, I was a big fan of, and also another nice chap that I sort of know to say hello to is Kevin the Colonel Minter. How did you get involved with Kev?
Kevin, he's from the same area as me, Wellingborough. And with Kevin, it was a case of like, I got to know his dad, bless him, his late dad. And I was speaking to Stan, his dad, and we always went into the same bookmakers in Wellingborough, Ladbrokes, Goodyear's, or another one, I can't remember. And we was always talking, and then Kevin would come in, tell his dad a bit of information. And it was like that. So me and Kevin keep in touch, the odd message now and again. And now he's at Henlow doing the commentating.
Okay, any particular things that you learned from Kevin that stood the test of time?
Yeah. And it's the same with, and it was the same with my mentor. Say little and listen a lot. Like that. It was, Kevin was a shrewd punter. He would hardly tell anybody apart from his dad and a few good friends. But yeah, say little and listen a lot.
Okay, Mick, now this is the bit I'm looking forward to. You had the best mentor ever. Tell us who that was.
Aha, the late, great Barney Curley. What a legend this guy is. And how I met him, it was through luck and being in the right place at the right time, which was Huntingdon Racecourse. And like I said earlier in the interview, I've got more front than Sainsbury's. And I recognised him through the TV and things like that. And I just went up to him, said hello. And it was like a grunt, like that, and things. But we got to know each other by going through me going to the racing, Barney going to the racing, and things like that. And after a while, that grew. And we would speak more at the racing and things like that. And he didn't say much. But when he said something to you, you took it in. You listened and took it in like that. And he's a hard man. But he didn't like. There was lots of people going up. Have you got a tip? Have you got a tip? He didn't like all this. And he'd grunt them away and things like that. But it was like I was a young gun and he was the old, he was the maestro, as we all know. And like I say, just the little things he said to me stayed in here. And yeah, and it's the same, he had the same mentality as Kevin, say little, listen a lot, that. And he also taught me a good one as well. If you can read a race before it's run, you're halfway there. You're halfway there of getting the winner. And it was just to be disciplined, just to be looking for the value and things like that. But yeah, absolutely great, Simon. That was so lucky, bumping into him, going racing at Huntingdon that time. Yeah.
How long did that little association go on for?
Well, it was like we met up, like I say, Huntingdon. Being based in the Midlands near Leicestershire, Northamptonshire border, I had Stratford, Warwick, Uttoxeter, Huntingdon, Leicester over the jumps, like that. And I would bump into him every now and again. It wasn't a case of swapping phone numbers and things like that. But it was like we clicked. We both, he knew that I had an enthusiasm for horse racing. And he knew that I wasn't stupid about backing in every race and things like that. So I think it worked well.
One thing you told me about never listening to stable staff, owners and trainers. That was another gem for me.
Oh, my days. I'm good friends with Simon Pearce. And I used to go down Newmarket regularly on the Gallops, pop down, see Simon, Lydia and Jeff and all that. And I can take people around Newmarket, various stables. And it's like supporting a football team. We all support a football team, rugby team or cricket team. We all want them to win. And that's a downfall. If you're listening to stable staff and things like that, it's like you all want your horse to win. Everybody's horse is working good at home like that. But how do you know how well the other horses are working at home like that? So the only person I listen to, and he's very shrewd as well, is Simon. If Simon says to me anything, yeah, but like he doesn't like that. He's not like that. He's a sound guy, and yeah, he's also a fellow Spurs supporter.
So when you can't all be perfect. So when you So when you started making money in your 30s, was this after sort of taking on the advice from Barney and the Colonel and people? And so you spent a lot of your time at the races doing your business.
Yeah, it was literally, like I said, reading lots of books, doing your homework, just specialising, because that's all what I got told, was specialise. And I know that it's the all-weather, it's boring, it's the all-weather, but it showed me the profit, and it showed me the biggest profits backing on the all-weather. So that's what I stuck with. And like I say, that's after taking in Barney's advice, listening to Kevin. Kevin didn't say much, but when Kevin spoke, when he was in the book, just listen to him like that. And yeah.
Why did you decide to concentrate on the all weather? Was it just a case of that you looked at your results and saw that you were getting the best profit from the all weather? Or was it just to make it easier? Was it just to
I was
make
getting
it
the best
easier?
Profit.
Yeah,
I was getting the best profit, but I was also finding the value more on the all weather as well. Front runners, the pace and things like that. And yeah, that was the case. I could back a 16 to one shot each way, and I would look at it. If it came into place, I would be happy. And if it won, it was a bonus. And that's the way I looked at it. And yeah, it was a case of that was where the biggest results, the biggest profits was. So why change?
Okay, and then you decided to condense it even more and concentrate on 5 furlong to a mile.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about, as we know in the business, it's all about adapting and looking for various angles and things like that. And I started going from 5 furlongs to a mile, specialising in them, because when I looked at the results again, it was a case of like, this is where I'm doing better. This is where I need to concentrate. And that's where people go wrong. I would spend hours a day, even the night before, going through the form. It made it easier because I was going through the handicaps, 5, 7, a mile, like that, and I can shortlist the horses. And then once I shortlisted them, it was a case of like, I'm looking for the value between these two or three horses, like that. And yeah, and that's like I say, that's where.
Why do you think that 5 furlongs to a mile is the most accurate for finding winners, the best distance for finding winners?
For me, on your weather, it was all about you're looking for. I was looking for the draw bias, the pace, the front runners, even I'll call them now here the stalkers, the ones what a mid division and a bit closer, like that. And I'm not when everybody goes on about sectionals. I don't go for that because every meeting's different and things like that. I was just looking for the pace angle of the race.
What tools do you use? So what websites, form, you know, sort of guides, anything like that? Any sort of speed figures or?
Yeah, I was a big fan of GG's. To me, that was ideal. That was the perfect one. I tried race form, didn't get on with it. Racing post, all this, and a few others out there, but GG's was my go-to every day. And I also used that ATR as well.
Yeah, so the betting on the all weather, are you ever sort of a bit worried about what happens if one drifts like hell? If
no.
You're not worried about that. So no. would you have a bit more on? If you think
definitely, it's... definitely. If I was, I'm confident in all the selections what I do. And if I see, I'll take you back to Royal Ascot 2022. I know that's the turf, but Royal Ascot 2022, Stratton, I was on that at 10, 12 to 1. And I thought that was value. It drifted 16 to 1, backed it again, it drifted even more. So I backed it. And that's the same as on Your Weather. Stratton went on to win. And that's the same as in Your Weather. If I see the value of 10 to 1, I think the bookie is like overpriced that, I'll back it. And if it keeps drifting, I'll back it three times, a maximum of three times.
What are you basing the value price on? Is it just instinct? You'll sort of see a price, you think that's too big, or have you got like, or is there any sort of like on Gigi's or whatever? Is there some sort of guide as to what would be a good price? How did you come up?
It's instinct. It's instinct and what I feel, what I'm happy with, what price I'm happy with taking. Back in the UK, I was an each way punter. So I'm looking for the horse to at least make the frame. So I'm looking at backing anything 4 to 1, 9 to 2 and bigger. I am. And then when it comes to the price, if I think 10 to 1 is overpriced, yeah, I'm backing it. And then like you say, Simon, if it's drifting and drifting, I will back it maximum of three times.
And what sort of level are you betting at? Or where are you betting at? I know it's different where you are now, but
yeah. In the UK, I was backing 100, 150 pounds like that. So it'd be a 75 pound each way bet, something like that. Maybe a bit more. It was all to do with my bankroll. I would always back 2.5% of my bankroll. Always. So when I was on a winning streak, the bet would go up. When I was on a losing streak, the bet will decrease.
Right. So there was enough, you know, that was enough to make a living.
I worked it out that I needed to sustain a 10-run losing streak like that. That's how, and luckily enough, I never hit the 10. It was 6. Longest losing streak was 6 like that. So, yeah, I was lucky not to hit the 10.
Okay. Okay, Mick. So you were making a few quid betting professionally. And you're also hosting at the big meetings, Royal Ascot, Newmarket, etc. What were you doing and how did that come about?
So basically, it was like I knew a few good business owners. They had race horses and things like that. They knew I was into racing. And it was prior to COVID, Royal Ascot prior to COVID. They was all up in one of the boxes up in Ascot. And the guy messaged me, he goes, "What do you fancy, Mick? What do you fancy?" Like that. I says, "Two selections." And these two selections, one hit the frame and one won. And he goes, "Have you got anything else?" "That I don't back in every race. That's a fool's game." And he goes, "Okay, I'll message you tomorrow." And it all started like that. And then the following year, they invited me to Ascot to host the party, what they had and things like that. And it just escalated. They went to Newmarket. The word got round. He gave my contact details to other people. They invited me to Newmarket and things like that. So that's how all that started.
Well, so you were going in the boxes, talking to the hospitality guests.
Yeah, they would pay for everything. They would pay for the hotel. They would pay. Yeah, they covered every expense like that. Plus, I had a few bob off them as well.
So that was a good sort of supplement to the gambling.
Yeah, They knew that I wasn't. They knew I knew my horses, and they knew that I didn't bet for the sake of it. And they was owners as well. So we had good times out.
Did you have to stay there all afternoon? because I just wonder what happened. On a bad day.
I was there all afternoon, like that. And the bad days is like, luckily enough, it's if you do it right and you find a few selections and you're looking for the later races, so when they've all had a few drinks, so if they win, they're happy, and if they lose, oh, they're still happy like that. But no, literally, they understood that, like, you do lose. It's not a God-given like that you're going to find winner after winner after winner. But they knew that like I would be looking for the value for them and things like that. So on losing days, to be honest, we didn't have many, but when we did, they wasn't bothered because they all knew that like I was looking for the value. I wasn't just tipping the odds on the favourites, the second favourites. I was all getting the good prices.
It's all about the entertainment as well, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, precisely.
Well, and also I see you were offering like a tipping service, horses and sports betting. So what was
not so much the sports betting like that. It's like people try getting me involved in it. Not my thing. It's tipping the horses. I had a successful little group back in the UK, 50 members like that, mainly locals and things, and a few people from all over the country. But yeah, that was successful. They all start when they was winning, they withdraw their money and they just kept to their original bankroll like that. But the sports betting, that people have tried to get me involved with it. I stick to what I know.
Okay, so your decision to relocate to the Philippines wasn't to do with racing or betting initially. Can you still bet on UK racing over there? Have you turned that in now?
I could. The thing is, we're 7 hours in front of the UK. Prior to the clocks going forward, we was 8 hours in front. And I tried it, and the time difference, especially with the night meetings at Wolverhampton, Kempton, like that, I tried it, and there was a few bookies online that would accept the bet and things like that. But no, now it's completely all to do with Filipino horse racing. One, because we're on the same time zone like that, and it's easier.
Okay, so what's the main difference between the racing over there and in the UK? I'm assuming there's no jump racing. But you don't bet on that anyway. So what's the main, how many race courses are there?
Right, so at the minute, we only have, there was a few, and then COVID came along, and yeah, they closed down. So Metro Manila Turf, they own the only racetrack at the moment, which is 40 minutes away from us. And that's it. So we only got one race course here. We race Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. But we have a brand new racetrack being built as we talk through the Japanese, and it's going to be state of the art. It's a cracking looking track, what I'm seeing of it, and I've been invited up later on in the month to go and have a look around.
So what the betting habits of the locals like?
the locals, they do. I love them to bits, and it's the same as being in the bookmakers in the UK. They love doing the forecasts. They love doing the trivectors. They love the pick four, the daily double, the pick five and things. They're looking for the big win. And they don't understand that this English punter has come over here and all he concentrates on is single picks. They call the solo pick. They don't understand it.
So do you have bookmakers there or is it just a tote monopoly?
There's no bookmakers. There's no betting ring whatsoever. It's just the betting is run similar to the tote, which is under Metro Manila Turf, like that. So there's an app, and they got the kiosks on the race course and things like that, and you can go and put your bet on like that. So it's similar to the tote.
There's no betting exchanges is there any bookmakers that take bets online at fixed odds on the Filipino racing?
No, nothing. And if there's any English bookmakers, believe me, the Filipinos would love the chance to go online and bet like that. We have what we call the OTBs here, outside betting terminals, where it's like there'd be a restaurant or a little bar where they authorise to have the screens for the racing, and they're authorised to take the bets with people that can't get to the racing. Plus, we also have the Metro Manila Turf app where you can place a bet.
Okay, now I'm guessing, I mean, most people would think that it'd be impossible for a serious punter to beat the tote system. But then on the other hand, the majority of punters lose. So if you have got an edge, you would probably get a bit of value. Is that right? Or, I mean, do you know what the takeout is like?
Yeah. It was, Simon, it was literally, like I say, we've been over here coming on 7 months now. And as soon as we stepped foot off out of the airport into the apartment that we first had, it was, I would watch the racing, replay after replay, watch the racing and everything else. And I could see a bias already like that, especially at 1,400 metres and even 1,200. And I was picking up on things. And yeah, it was, I was literally paper bets. I was just writing down what I fancied like that. No betting. Like, I just wanted to make sure what I was doing was right and things like that. And I'm getting there. I'm 75% there.
So it'd be the same pool of horses running on the same course. I suppose that somebody like you that is into specialising, that's the ideal scenario.
Yeah, precisely. It's at the moment, because we've only got one racetrack, these horses turn out, some of them regular, some of them not so regular, like that. And like I say, I'm still getting to know them all. And yeah, it was when I go racing here in Batangas, I'm up in the press and media area all the time with them. And you got the stopwatch guys, the Filipino stopwatch guys doing it, all this and everything else like that. And they're trying to talk to me about things. What's the difference between Filipino and English racing? And I'm trying to explain to them. And it's good. It is good.
There's no language barrier then? Everybody speaks English?
There's sometimes there's a language barrier, but I can speak a little Tagalog. They can understand a little English most of the time, but when we put the words together, we come out with the same thing.
Yeah, so you're saying that when you were picking your winners back home, you'd like GGs and those sort of websites. Is there any sort of anything like that you can use, or do you have to do a bit more of the work yourself?
We have Dazzo.ph, which is GGs, but not 50% of GGs, if you can see what I mean, like that. They've got all the replays. Instead of where GGs, we can go back 3-5 years and filter the horses and the results like that. Here, only 1 year like that. So they do that. And got the pace angles through Horse Racing Philippines. I subscribe to them as well, because that is a good thing. So I use Dazzo PH and I use Philippines Horse Racing, his little database, what he sends me, what I subscribe to. And between them two, it's good.
So is the plan to start a tipping service over there and educate the locals?
Yeah. That is the plan. Slowly, slowly. It was like this morning I woke up and there's messages on my Facebook. Hi, boss. What's your selections for today? Like this. And I was getting prepared for you today doing this. And I said, it'll all be on Facebook later on. Okay, boss. Okay. They love it. And it's just educating them that it's all about the long term.
And just finally, then, you were telling me that you got plans to branch out to Hong Kong, Dubai, and beyond. So,
yeah, that next year, starting the flat season next year over in Sha Tin and Happy Valley, there's a few things in the pipeline like that, which, fingers crossed, come up like that. And then that will lead to us going to Dubai as well. Like that. The good thing about being based here in the Philippines is that Hong Kong is a 2-hour flight like that. So it's a good quick commute. Dubai's a little bit further, obviously. So yeah, it's looking good. The future's looking good for the middle to back end of this year.
Is that for punting or for hospitality or for both?
That is for hospitality. hosting, that is for Sha Tin and Happy Valley.
Okay, Mick, so finally, it's been raining over here forever. Do you miss the UK racing?
Oh. If you're asking me, do I miss the weather? That's 50-50. I do miss the rain and the cold mornings. Don't get me wrong. I would be lying if I didn't. But here, now, I'm talking to you. It's roughly 4:30, whatever time in the afternoon here, and it's 36 degrees like that. So when it comes to the horse racing, I'm happy with the horse racing here, how it's going, because I feel that in the UK, there's just too much of it now, especially with the Sunday night racing. It's not fair. So, like I said to you earlier, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, that's ideal for me over here. One meeting instead of two or whatever meetings a day or something like that. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Okay, so it's going to be
all I miss.
It's going to be a while before anybody sees you at Wolverhampton again, then, I'm guessing.
Well, at the end of the day, it's like I do miss going down to Newmarket, see Simon, see all the faces down there. I miss going to the all-weather. When we're over on a holiday, I've already been invited up to Hamilton like that. And when you're down in England, come to Wolverhampton, which we will like that. But yeah. But how racing is at the moment, I just think there's just too much of it.
Okay, Mick. Well, good luck with deciphering the Filipino form, and with your travels. And I appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
No worries, buddy. No worries. Good talking to you. Thanks a lot.